Hello and welcome back to season two of The Platinum Rule. We are a news update and political science playground for policies and spotlights on current things happening that can affect you or indirectly impact your neighbors. Hello everybody, welcome back to The Platinum Rule. I'm Sophia and this is Amari. We're here for episode
six.
We're here for episode six. And we have got a hot topic this week. So before we dive into anything, did you watch Super Bowl?
I did, fortunately and unfortunately.
Fortunately, why?
Because the weekend, and I'm a OG 2012 weekend stan. I waited outside of Best Buy in 2012 to buy his album at 8 a.m. So for him to now be performing halftime is mind-blowing.
Right. And honestly, what a production.
I mean, the fact that he was conscious of masks and social distancing really just goes to show that talent is just as important as production. And he brought it.
We stan. And also, Pepsi and the Super Bowl didn't fund the halftime show this year. So he invested seven mil of his own earnings to give us that amazing production. So we stand the weekend over here at the Platinum approved.
Absolutely.
Now, unfortunately, besides the game just sucking and being so uneventful, is that all why it sucked for you?
I just don't like seeing someone who makes out with their kids on television. I just don't enjoy watching that. Like, did I tell a lie?
No lie detected. But also, this Super Bowl, I mean, I get we are in Black History Month. I am here for it. I love it. But let's not make it performative. The lovely poet that was at inauguration, Amanda Gorman, She was lovely at inauguration. And I get we are still in the month of Black History Month. But they had her do a poem before the Super Bowl started. And I just thought that was super interesting. Like, what, you know, and I could be wrong, but I want to know what intern thought it was a grand idea after watching Inauguration and said, book this girl for the Super Bowl. I think almost it's kind of like a downgrade for her to go from Inauguration to the Super Bowl, but that's just me. And I totally get it. It drove a momentum before the game even started. And maybe they wanted to appreciate Black culture before it even started and, you know, a Black win. However, I mean, if they were really about it, they should have shown Colin Kaepernick.
I just think that they are reaching to try to be relevant and get as many people to talk about it and watch it as possible. And to me, that is manipulation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not a business gal. I'm not a media gal. So this is just my outside opinion on the way they manipulate people's emotions, especially through media.
Sometimes some marketing tactics used by huge corporations just rub me the wrong way. And this was one.
It's cringe. And especially with the commercials. I mean, I think all commercials since June 2020, you can see the shift. They are more interracial couples than ever. There are more minorities on the screen than ever. Some commercials now don't even have, you know, white people in the commercials. It's all people of colors. And like you were saying, it's almost getting to the point where it's performative. And I'm Black and I recognize this. Like, yes, I love to see my representation, but like, is this going to last or are we just going to do this until the pandemic's over and then no one cares about BLM or the pandemic and then it's just going to go back to what it was before? Who knows? Right. Hoping for the best, but history repeats itself.
I want to see next Super Bowl and it better be the same energy. I mean, Super Bowl's in February every year. The months always existed, so I'm just curious why so heightened this year. I don't not appreciate it. I'm just saying if we were really about Black culture and standing up for what's right, we would have brought Colin Kaepernick in the mention of Black History Month through that commercial, through that running of their little program, and not once was this man mentioned. He is still unemployed by the NFL. So I think that rests its case right there. I'm ready to move on. How about you?
I want to say one other thing.
Do it. One last thing, then mic drop that.
I saw something that one year a performer respected all of the individuals who passed away from 9/11. and put their first and last names on the screen while they were performing. And someone mentioned that if they were to put every individual's name who has lost their life to COVID, it would have taken over 12 hours, just to put things into perspective for you guys. And with that, wear your mask.
Okay, so moving on from Super Bowl, now that we got the Super Bowl chat out of the way, just a little background for you guys. I have lived in Northern California. I have lived in the Bay Area, which is Northern California. It's just a different culture. All the Bay Area people know this. I have lived in the Central Valley, which is really ag farm town. I had not experienced anything like that. Everything is different in the Central Valley, and much respect to farmers. And then moving a little down, now I live in Orange County. I have the pleasure of following people from all over California on my socials with opposing views all up and down the spectrum of perspectives that exist. Something that came up after inauguration on my feeds was a lot of the issue of policies that were enacted by Trump that were criticized, and now similar policies are being praised by the same groups of people. So I've witnessed many, many, many people calling out hypocrisy. And I think it's important to hold all of us accountable in the act of when we're met with something we do not agree with, to immediately turn to the H word, hypocrisy. I think the only way to combat this is to find and present only facts. We'll dive deeper into that. That is how we came up with the way we were going to approach this episode.
Like Sophia said, all of that brought us to our second featured guest of the season.
Woo!
I'm going to introduce her soon, but I wanted to tie in why we thought she was the perfect person to talk about media, and especially quote-unquote hypocrisy. She was very hands-on throughout the 2020 election and has a bird's eye view of all media in relation to politics.
Here is our phone a friend segment.
Hello?
Hi! Today we have a very special guest introduced. Her name is Elizabeth, and some of you ASU peeps may know her as ECAV. She was always so kind to me during our time together at ASU, and she is now here to be a guest on the podcast, which I couldn't be more excited about, so I will let her introduce herself, and here she is.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me on. I'm so excited to be here. She said, I'm Elizabeth. We went to school together. Post-graduation, have been doing a lot of things, working most recently and full-timely, I guess I could say, on Senator Sanders' presidential campaign during the Democratic primary. So I was one of his national press leads, as we call them. So basically what that means is I traveled on the campaign trail with him all around the country and helped to manage our traveling press corps and the other press that would be in any given city. And then intermixed in there, I've done some communications directing for the lieutenant governor's race out in Vermont. I'm currently working on the Georgia legislative session, doing some communications work after Senator Sanders wrapped up his presidential bid amidst the peak start of COVID. I hopped on to the DCCC's coordinated campaign for Joe Biden and Mark Kelly here in Arizona, and then transitioned somewhat into doing more specific press work and on the road, COVID safe campaign work for now President Biden. And most recently just got done at the inauguration working with the press. So kind of all over the place.
That definitely is kind of what sparked me by, you know, everything that you were doing, especially in politics, because you've kind of been in the front seat, at least from like a point of view from an outsider looking in. So, you know, I always admired that about you. And then when I saw you at the inauguration, like literally so close to all of these people that are, you know, going to change our nation, I was like, okay, that's it. We gotta have her on. I'm so happy that you made it on, and all of your accomplishments, I just want to say, are super honorable, and I cannot wait to hear more. I have an off-the-cuff question that was not in the prepared questions, but I just wanted to kind of hear your point of view on that.
Hit me.
You were a Georgia voter in the 2020 election and a voter in the runoff election.
I was. I was excited about the runoff, I think, before the rest of America was. Georgia's been crazy. So quick explanation on that, because I know a lot of our college friends might be listening and they're like, she's not from Georgia. And I'm not. I am a Washington State native. I grew up there. My parents left when I was in college and moved to Georgia. And ever since they moved, Georgia has been the new, you know, go home during the holidays. And I just feel so lucky to have experienced the different communities down in Georgia. It's just, it's literally diagonally across the country. So it's a completely different world. And being immersed in it in a way where I have family living there has been a totally different ballgame. And I've learned so much from Georgia politics and the wonderful grassroots organizers and activists that are really changing a lot of the rhetoric that's going on in the state.
I feel like you've been involved in every action possible in the last year, 12 months.
I mean, off of Amari's intro that she gave a second ago, so much of the job that I'm called to do is being behind the scenes.
Gotcha.
I do feel lucky to have learned a lot, and it's kind of like jumping off Niagara Falls. All of us who've seen the divide in our country know that this is not, you know, just one election or every 4 years. It's something that's ongoing.
That's definitely been a topic in a previous episode we had with a guest. I'm glad that you mentioned that.
That's the other thing, and I'll just say, sorry, I keep rambling, but...
No, I love it.
No, please ramble.
Go off right now.
I just think back to that point, one thing I would say to everyone that says, oh, it's so cool you're at the inauguration, or it's so cool that you're helping out in Georgia, and then you're helping with Mark Kelly, and this, that, and the other thing. It takes every single one of us, and I'm a true believer in the progressive political movement. To make that a reality, it takes everyone. It takes people who aren't in this field as a profession, you know? And while it is cool, it's kind of, I want to bring people with me.
Yeah, your talk of inclusivity is so beautiful, and I think it's a sentiment that a lot of people can bring into their daily life and in their careers no matter what they do. So I'm really glad that you said that. I wanted to ask you, what sparked your interest in politics?
So I grew up in a very scientific family. Almost every single member of my dad's side of the family is a scientist in some form or another, most of them being physicians and medical providers, some working in physics and things of the sort. I was kind of the black sheep of the family. When I was younger, my mom got me involved in my church youth group when I was in middle school and sent me on something called Urban Plunge. It was basically through Center of Student Mission service trip down to inner city San Francisco. So I could go on for a long time about how that sparked my interest, I think, at an early age in the economic class divide and suppression, although I didn't know what those things were fully at that time. It was this whole new world that I hadn't been exposed to. Just following that in high school, I was still really involved in my youth group. It was a very progressive youth group, I think some might say. We went down to Tijuana, Mexico every year and stayed in an orphanage and built houses. That really just sparked my interest in a lot of ways in poverty, obviously, but I think it was just this growing desire to know more about the systems that created these circumstances for people, because I don't believe that people just land themselves in poverty without there being a real systemic issue for it. And so that sparked my interest in understanding, because I didn't understand. I had grown up in primarily white Spokane, Washington, into a very privileged family. Through school and college, it just exponentiated. And ever since then, it's been turning over these rocks, corrupt areas we have in our systems, the broken areas of our systems that we have in governance, wanting to get to the root of the problem. A lot of people follow that up sometimes with, then what do you think of service trips? And I mean, there's a lot to be said for that, but that premise of that question being that there is a problem. So yeah.
That sparked that question in my head, but I was going to let you finish. But I'm glad you touched on that too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge issue for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it stems from white privilege. That's something that we have to acknowledge. There's a lot to be done there. And I mean, people have written whole books, so I won't go too much into it. But I think it's definitely something that needs to be continually acknowledged.
I'm glad that opened the door for you, though. I mean, you were the right person to be on that trip, because you weren't just going through the motions, but actually digging deep and, like you said, trying to find the root of the problem, which I know there's a lot of criticism that comes with those, pros and cons.
Eternally grateful for not washing it in the evangelical way, which can often happen.
Great.
And wonderful intentions as well. Mm-hmm. I'm also come from a very religious family and also do not like the evangelical kind of association with Christianity.
Yeah.
We really just want to hear your opinions on just about everything, but let's start with the large media conglomerates and overarching control and the connotation that has with people on Twitter and like the actual reality of what's going on and why that's hurtful. Yeah.
One of the things some people might be aware of, basically 90% of all media interests in the United States are owned by about 5-6 telecommunications companies. These groups own a lot of the news outlets that we're familiar with, CNN, NBC, Fox News, CBS, ABC. It's really important in this age of disinformation and kind of this war on the press. Do these big conglomerates mean that these companies are bad? No, not necessarily. But this is a multi-billion-dollar industry. And really, after the Telecommunications Act in the late 90s that President Clinton passed, we saw a huge concentration of media.
So as someone that's so involved with the media and the press, I bet others are just as curious as I am about where you get your news from. So if you don't mind sharing.
I get my news from Politico, The New York Times, Jacobin, CNN, NBC, sometimes ABC, kind of all over the board. What I would say to people, like on a personal note, if I go to The New York Times, I know I'm going to get a very, and this is where this gets into my opinion, I'll preface. I know I'm going to get a very centrist, neoliberal point of view. If I go to Politico, I like Politico a lot. I know that I'm going to get a lot of hard facts with some commentary if I look for it. If I go to the Washington Post, it's going to be somewhat similar to the New York Times. If I go to CNN, I know that what Chris Cuomo says during primetime and Anderson Cooper say during primetime, they are anchors. They are reporters, but they are anchors during primetime. It's going to be different than what I get from Breonna Keeler in the morning. With all of this being said, news is not all bad. In most worlds, is wonderful. And they do hard, hard work. The reporters be on the ground working their tails off to get information out because they believe in our country and free press as a liberty of democracy. As you take in information, you have to understand who's saying it to you. Just as if you're hearing one thing from one friend, you know that it may come differently from another friend. I have outlets that I love to turn to just for opinion, Jacobin being one of them. But would I recommend Jacobin as a center, facts first news source for everyone in the country? Absolutely not. Absorb what you need to know first, and then it expand into your opinion. How's that for a ramble?
That was amazing.
In just our previous conversations, we wanted to touch on the Latinx communities and media. So what's your take on that to start?
The two major news sources for Spanish-speaking individuals are on cable news are Univision and Telemundo. So those are, I guess you could call them, little conglomerates of the bigger scale. In no way are they on the same economic resource level as Comcast or, you know, these other companies. The one thing that I am starting to have more of an opinion on is that we need more resources in the Latinx and Spanish-speaking communications and news media space. And then I think another important piece of this is that, as for me, as a white American, on major news outlets that we're all familiar with, I think oftentimes we see a mainstream bias in the way Latinx issues are framed. And it kind of overtakes this neutrality that good reporting on non-Latinx issues maintains. The way that things are framed, and I don't know how much of this is my opinion, but how can we make it so that Latinx communities in the U.S. are getting the information they need, the facts they need, the news they need, without this framework and this rhetoric that serves as a veil over the top of it when it's being given by mainstream media. And I'm not trying to bash those companies, but it's something that we need growth in.
Do you think, if you had to pick one side, do you think it's more of a lack of push on the Univision and Telemundo journalism side? Or do you think it's a lack in the economic resources?
So I think obviously with Univision and Telemundo just off the bat, that those are the two biggest media conglomerates, if you want to call it that. To your question, I think Telemundo and Univision do great, but we need growth in Spanish language news. And I also think that one of the things that I've read, and I don't, you know, I'm not pretending to know everything about this in any way, nor am I a member of that community.
No, I'm genuinely curious to hear, because I mean, let's just say, like, I'm not fully, but I am a member of the community. So I'm just like, is this about to spark something for me to go and become a journalist for my people or what?
Well, and I think one of the things that has struck me the most, those newsrooms need to have those resources because people don't know who else to call. We need to normalize in a country where the Latinx population is growing. How can systematically make this a priority?
Systematically a disadvantage.
Yeah.
They're lacking the resources, and I don't think the journalism is being pushed as hard for the non-watered down news.
Yeah.
So definitely.
I personally have not thought about that for a second, and that is definitely something that I will start to throw myself into when it comes to gaining more clarity on exactly what that means. I'm like taking it all in.
See, like, I feel like these conversations need to happen because, I mean, half of my family speaks Spanish,
yeah.
And I'm just thinking about the news that they take in, and I've had to stop them before.
Yeah.
Elizabeth's dog is barking and
Teddy's trying to say hi.
Teddy is cute.
Hi, Teddy.
Trying to say hi to everyone. No, I mean, of course, I can't imagine being, you know, primarily a Spanish speaker living in this country.
Right.
Like, just try and put yourself in those shoes.
And you can read something that's translated, but, like, who put that on your page for you to read it? Like, who are you following that would put that information on your page?
We can do better for Spanish-speaking communities in this country.
Right. I mean, our mainstream, if you want to call it mainstream news, is big powerhouses against another big powerhouse that don't always agree and have very drastic different takes on any situation, current events, policies, whatever it may be. What happens when that's not happening for a whole language-speaking group?
Yeah.
There is no powerhouse battle kind of ordeal going on. Where is the balance? Where is the, you know, contemplation of the both sides aspect? It's really just taking from everyone else's stories. So, I mean, that kind of takes us into our next topic. We wanted to ask you just your thoughts on disinformation.
The most fun. The least fun, but the most fun to discuss.
No, I mean, let's preface this by saying people have written whole books on this. So I, as just a little nobody in the world, will give you my opinion. But
we want to hear it.
Disinformation is 100% real. And not all news is fake news. And some news is disinformation. So, confused yet? Me too. Obviously, we all know the fiery rhetoric about partisanship and what that means for disinformation. That is real. That needs to be stopped in its tracks. Right now, we're living in a pandemic. I am FaceTiming with you both. We are doing this separately. It has affected so many people under the sun. People have lost their lives, their jobs. We are living in a country where people are spreading conspiracy theories and or don't know what to believe about a basic, many ways complicated, but the facts being basic, health crisis in the U.S. Read data the other day that 71% of Americans recently have heard a conspiracy theory that COVID was planted by people in power, you know, these things that are coming up on alt-right media groups, that nearly 40% of those people who had heard those conspiracy theories believed it to be true. People oftentimes, when asked who to believe about the health facts in this time, fell across party lines. The divide was clear. Democrats believe the CDC increasingly, and Republicans increasingly believe the White House the Trump administration, sure, but that entity. So that's a huge problem. Do I know how to solve it? No, I don't. I think a lot of great people are working on ways to solve it and are trying, but I think it's not getting much better. Don't know sometimes what else to say other than facts are facts. There's something to be said, you know, as using this health crisis as an example for professional expertise, maybe in the medical field. Maybe there can be differences of opinion. I live in a family full of medical providers. They see Fauci up on the news. They see, you know, other health professionals come from the CDC. There may be differences in opinion on treatment or what is going to be the most effective, what drug trials might be successful, things of that nature, you know, the dinner table talk when you have two medical providers as parents. But one thing that is baseline amongst real scientists and people who work this every day are the facts, the pillars of growth, the growing number of deaths. And so these are baseline things. How do we combat disinformation? You know, obviously, I was just talking about the pandemic. Disinformation is growing in so many other ways. We have a QAnon conspiracy theorist in Congress right now. I think a really important thing, two important things to acknowledge. The first being that a lot of the disinformation that we're seeing in our country right now is whitewashed white supremacy. And it comes from communities and places and groups online that are not just nobodies. They are people that have growing platforms
and voting
and
power.
And those growing platforms have growing audiences. It's important to understand where these people are coming from. I don't say that in a coddly sense. Why is white supremacy seem like it's all of a sudden coming to the surface of America with arguably Trump's election to the presidency? No, these things have existed for decades. These feelings of white supremacy and of nationalism and of, you know, isolationism in the U.S. are things that have been festering for decades. And a lot of these groups have just now been given kind of the green light to speak what has been festering for decades and generations, that the root of this disinformation is coming from people who are trying to do some really bad things in this country. And maybe because of the way they were brought up, maybe because of the lack of education or exposure to other communities that they've had. But how can we start to attack the root of the issue so that we can mitigate the overall problem of this kind of rhetoric? And I think that's a massive undertaking. And I don't think we've seen the worst of it. I'm not going to solve it overnight. I'm not probably not going to be the one to solve it. And I think it's going to take some really intelligent people and a complete overhaul of communities and education in those communities in more areas than just what is real news and what's not. Understanding economic class divides, racial divides, things of this nature. I think the best thing that we can do right now to combat disinformation is to call it out when we see it. Sharing the tweet online and calling it out as it is, and compounding, you know, that calling out of disinformation with the hard facts. Because when faced with facts again and again and again, facts that don't change, that limits the power of this disinformation. But if we just let it roam freely and we don't call it out when we see it, then it's a festering wound.
I completely agree with that. Yeah. The worst part is, like, you know, we all use social media. I can actually say hate, strong word hate, when I see disinformation being spread. But we actually had someone that conversation was a lot similar to what you're just describing of, you know, conspiracy theories and believing that this pandemic was put out, it was plotted, it's a trial right now. And I just, like, think to the point of when we combat with facts, where we look at them in a certain perspective, how they're turning that back around on the facts. We've reached a point where people don't even believe, or
acknowledge the facts.
Yeah.
And that's the most disappointing, actually scariest part.
Yeah.
And it's also important, just for while we're speaking on this, for everyone that's listening, to think that because we're quote unquote Gen Z, we're gonna grow into a rainbows and butterflies situation is completely false.
Right.
As most of you heard on our first phone a friend, you heard what someone our age thinks is going on right now. She's not alone. There is over 40% of people in our generation that agree with that. We cannot continue to just let, like you said, it fester. Yeah.
I think what's important, kind of going back to what I was talking about and like getting to the root of the issue. Yes, people have different trials and tribulations and hardships in these countries, working class people. One of the ways we can combat that kind of feeling and heat is by saying, okay, what issues does this person face? Most of the Americans in the U.S. are working class individuals. And what are we doing? How can we lift their wages? How can we get them health care in the middle of a pandemic? And when we start to solve people's problems, working class Americans' problems, then the heat of that fire starts to diminish. Right now, we're living in under the current Biden administration. And as said at the top, I did work to elect Joe Biden after Senator Sanders. And I believe that that was the right choice of our time. We're living under this rhetoric in the Democratic Party of unity. And that is something that is really hard for me to swallow. Not that I want our country to be, you know, this divided wasteland of people at each other's throats. By no means is that what I want. But I think we're doing a disservice to working class Americans and to people all over this country if we say, oh, for the most part, set most things aside. I am all for working across the aisle, unless it is at the cost of a large group of Americans' well-being. People are going to start campaigning in the next 6 months. I think Democrats are going to do a huge disservice to the gains that they've made in the Senate with two progressive platforms, may I say, that were won in Georgia, not centrist moderate platforms. We're going to lose these huge gains and this momentum to get right back on the right track, not in the right place, because I don't think we necessarily were ever in the right place, if they continue to function under this umbrella of big tent unity. That's right. All we stand for. And because people are mad, disinformation is happening because they don't want incremental change. People oftentimes spread this disinformation because they're big ideas, they're big things, whether good or bad. People don't want incremental change in this country.
And what's the craziest part about that sentiment as a whole is that they still haven't learned, because same thing happens every, you know, 4 to 8 years with this same idea. Like, we got to push through. We can't make friends. We, you know, I love the whole, what was Michelle Obama's thing? Oh, when they shoot low, we shoot high. Yeah. Yes, that's great. But at this point, we just need things to change. Yeah. So it's not about shooting high or shooting low. It's about change. And by playing both sides, we're not going to see any real change until we're in our 40s and 50s. Yeah. And like, you know, that's unfortunate to say, but like, it's almost the reality. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm also, and not to kind of have like a negative, I'm fearful that another type of insurrection, type of fueling, is going to take it to that place.
You have a growing populism within our country, once again, good for the good or the bad, not just in our country. Look at the UK and Brexit. And you have the growing polarization of two sides. While that may have some downfalls, I think the damage is done. I think we're there. I don't think we're going to get back to the middle. We may get back to the middle in a lot of, you know, legislative senses, but we're in a new age. It's here, people. It ain't going back. So we got to stand up. Mm-hmm. We got to speak out, and we have to have bold ideas, because the days of platitudes are over. And if you don't believe that, just turn on the news.
And I think that was a beautiful ending line. Just got to give a round of applause.
Oh my gosh. Thank you both.
Is there anything else that you would like to say?
I guess I would just end on a note by saying thank you both so much for having me. I was so scared to do this podcast, oftentimes in the background, which I love. But I would just say, before I go, it takes every single one of us in this country. We can disagree on things unless they are harmful to another American's life. And I would just encourage you all to continue to do the work to be a good citizen of our country. Get involved, get informed, use your voice, call out disinformation when you see it, call out other terrible things and divisiveness that's going on in our country, because your voice is what you have right now. And I just am so thankful for you all letting me come on, because this was such a fun conversation. I don't get to talk like this every day with people.
Talking with you today, from wanting to learn more about systems that exist in our nation to your personal experiences as a witness to them, to finding solutions for other communities outside of your own, the amount of respect is shot through the roof. So thank you so much for joining us.
Back at awesome. You all. Oh, thank you. And you too. And how welcoming and how bright and intelligent and badassery of women that you are. So keep it up. This is awesome.
The feeling is so, so, so mutual. Thank you for taking time out of your day.
And with that, we just wanted to say thank you guys for returning and tuning in. We'll be back next Tuesday.
As we'd like to emphasize, we're just here to spark something for everyday people who do everyday things that have the magic to make differences everywhere.
With that being said, if you're feeling in the mood, please choose to share this episode, leave us a review, and follow us on Instagram if you don't already, @PlatinumRule Podcast.
Until next time.
Bye.